from project inception to project realization with everything that goes in between, calibrating the print client's requirements and the design team's creative impulse, form versus function, and budget versus brief, we take stock of how to mold the perfect magazine and look no further than right here at Midori House. This week here on The Stack, we indulge in a little self-praise as we celebrate some of Midori House's homegrown talent with an in-depth look at the branding and creative agency Wink Creative, based right here. In the interest of full disclosure, of course, this is a sister company of Monocle. Taking to the skies and the road with a new print personality for both the aviation and motor industries, bulldozing the word brochure from clients' vocabulary from fashion to nation branding, we'll be talking to the print professionals that made it happen. And we'll be inspecting the freshly published print spectacular that is Wink Creative Design Stories by Gestalten.
It feels like something that has a life of its own, you know, that has an identity. And so that is very rewarding, and I couldn't be more happy with a publication in this sense.
And we'll also be jumping the channel and going across to Paris to find out about that venerable and still much-used site, the kiosk.
We are proud of it. I mean, I feel proud of having kiosk. It's something in the city that belongs to the streets, and I'm very attached to the physical building, and also I'm attached to the fact that there's someone in the kiosk that tries to make a living.
All that and plenty more besides on the 75th edition of The Stack, Monocle's dedicated print, industry review, and analysis show. Hello and welcome to Studio 2 here at Midori House with me, Tyler Brulé. Now, even on our scale of things, this has been an incredibly busy one. Not only have we wrapped up the March issue, which will be a very special one indeed, but we've seen the launch of Wink Creative's book published by Gestalten. And if we're going to publish a book, then why not mount an exhibition? And I'm happy to say that Midori House is now hosting a beautiful visual anthology of some of the agency's best projects over the past 15 years. Now, before we get going with the show and meet our two Wink Creative guests, let's get some sounds of the book and exhibition launch, which happened this past Wednesday. Our producer, David Pleasant, was there, mic in hand, and began talking to Ariane Elfin, one of Wink Creative's account directors, about one particular publication on show.
We've done work for Porter Airlines since the launch. We created everything for this brand, who is a Canadian airline. And we did this first issue of the magazine 7 years ago. Then they shortly ordered another issue of the magazine, and it grew from like one issue to now being 8 issues of the magazine and being the biggest non-fair revenue generator for them, because the content is so strong, they can get advertising in there. So they've really managed to use this as a business tool and as a revenue generating thing. And it's a publication that the passengers love, and they love to touch and they love to feel it. It's very different to
traditional. Can we have a look at it? Would you say it was one of the first in that kind of generation of in-flight magazines to really kind of shake things up a bit?
I think that it's still true today. I think in-flight magazines are still generally terrible, and a reporter still really stands out as something that people enjoy reading, has great insights on the destinations, and has really managed to or be used as a tool to communicate the Porter brand to clients and make them feel part of this lifestyle and of small business and of interesting restaurants and interesting barbers. And compared to any other in-flight magazine, it has a very distinctive, very natural and intimate feel to it that I don't think any other magazine has. So it's been a very useful tool for them.
My name is Robert Clanton, and I'm the publisher with Gestalten.
And you've got a copy of a book in your hands, something that we're all here to welcome, the Wink Creative Design Stories that has just been published. Tell us a little bit about your impressions of the book.
As a publisher, you get new books almost every month, you know. And the thing is that when you bring them to the press, it takes 2 months before you have a final copy in your hand. And when it finally comes in, it feels like a new book. You know every word, you know every letter, you know every image in and out. And still, when you get it on your table and you don't just see it on a computer screen, it feels like something that has a life of its own, you know, that has an identity. And so that is very rewarding, and I couldn't be more happy with a publication in this sense. Also because I feel that Wink has done an incredible job in getting their knowledge and their insights across. That's usually what creative companies and outfits don't do. They try to put their work on a kind of pedestal and create some kind of a halo around that, which is fine, but it doesn't communicate on a democratic level. And I feel this book does that. You know, a lot of people didn't really see what was happening. A lot of people really admire the monocle aesthetic, and a lot of people really sort of admire the work, but they couldn't compute, they couldn't really put it together. So I think first things first, it's a very, very interesting book for everybody who is into whatever corporate consultancy, creative direction and all that, because it is a very, very good resource for these people. But I must say, I really hope that also there are students who pick that up, because you can learn a lot about how an industry works. And the most important thing you can also learn from the book, it is listen to the problems of the client. What do you have to solve? What problem can you solve for the client? And I think that book is a beautiful lesson.
And that was our David Pleasant speaking to Gestalten's publisher, Robert Clanton. A little bit earlier, you heard from Wink Creative's account director, Ariane Alvin. You're listening to The Stack here on Monocle 24. Now, I'm happy to say I'm joined in the studio by Maurice Fraser. After studying at London's Royal College of Art, Maurice went on to launch his career in New York at the prestigious design agency NICE, or NICE, where he led the design operations for Elizabeth Arden and Valentino. Wink Creative snatched him all the way back in 2001, where he now leads the creative team as our creative director. Maurice, welcome.
Hello.
Now, it was wonderful hearing such words of praise from Gestalten's Robert Clanton a little bit earlier. I guess when you look at the book and you look at that sort of body of work, if you could just sort of pick out one thing that stands out to you across the room, just beyond these studio walls.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably the project that pretty much sort of started the agency as well, was just, and for me was a dream project, of course, was working on Swiss. And you know how things kind of, it sort of triggered so many ideas and ways of thinking about, you know, sort of publishing as well as branding, and you know how we can sort of handle every element of the brand, from the sort of in-flight entertainment to the seats and the uniforms, and yeah, an absolute dream project. Mm. Partially also because I'm half Swiss, so.
Well, that helps as well. We're going to stay in the middle European world as well. I'm also joined by Corinna Drossel, who moved to the UK from her native Germany in 2000, studying at the London College of Communications before earning an MA at Central St. Martin's College. While there, Drossel was selected to work under renowned designer Neville Brody at his research studios. She's been with Wink Creative since 2006, where in 2011, she was made the company's head of design or design director. Corinna, when you look at, or you can't really look through the wall behind you, but when you think about the exhibition that's there, the body of work that is, of course, in the new book, what's most outstanding for you?
I mean, it's really a difficult question. I think what's amazing about our company is the kind of breadth of work and the variety of things we produce. But certainly one project that really has stuck with me, and luckily it has come back after a few years when we first started working on it, which is Toto Japan. We helped them launch in Europe, which was obviously an incredible task. The agency was very happy. And I personally worked on this as well with you and Maros. And it's been really exciting seeing the brand grow and really kind of establish itself within the European market under kind of a really different aesthetic to the one that they hold in Japan.
I should say as well, of course, you know, books are always a collaborative project, but this has very much been your baby. I think one of the great things, and we sort of said this on the evening, working with Gestalten, a publisher out of Berlin. And it was also the same with the Monocle book, because it was, of course, the same house that's done both. Was that there was never any discussion about what the creative exercise should be in a physical form, which was really amazing, that there was real freedom, that we didn't have to have a discussion about, you know, do we have to print the book in China? Absolutely not. If we wanted to print it in Germany, we could print it in Germany. And you realize when you talk to a lot of, you know, other companies, other agencies, other people who sort of venture down the path of doing a book, there are so many constraints. Everyone's sort of trying to think about the very last penny. And I think we're very fortunate in this.
We're absolutely fortunate. And I think working with Gestalten was was such an advantage because they, I think, they really appreciate the creative freedom that an agency gives to their own book. Not many publishers give you that creative freedom, actually. Mm. And the fact that, you know, we were able to have three different paper stocks in this book, you know, and this has really given us the license, I think, to create something quite unique.
Mm. This is, you know, probably going to, well, it'll probably receive a subjective answer, might even be a subjective question as well, Maurice. But you look through this volume and you've almost been at this agency since its foundation, of course, have played, you know, such a key part in so many of the projects. Do you see a clear line when you go through everything, or do you think that if, you know, someone happened upon this book at, you know, any number of booksellers around the world, and let's say they opened up at page 279, and you see a project like Wish Casa, of course, kind of project that you worked on in Brazil, and then let's say they wind up on page 197, where there's a series of portraits for Brisbane Airport, you know, another big project of ours. Do you think people see a clear line between everything?
I kind of hope that it really people will just see the fact that we really understand the clients and exactly what their objectives are, their aims are, and also they see some beautiful work, fantastic interiors, incredible photographers, all of the collaborations that we've had the very great fortune of working with over the years.
We've got you know, quite a serious stack of print, and it's just great to see this volume of other work that we've put out over the years. I thought that what we would do is we would go away for a very short break. After, we're going to head to Paris, but you're listening to The Stack here on Monocle 24, a very special edition. We're back in a moment.
The February issue of Monocle will help you plot your global progress in 2014. Turn the pages to find the villages, cities, and nations you need to visit for inspiration, work, and play. Whether you're looking for a new HQ, want to get that movie made, or perhaps are a spy, we'll tell you how to plan your itinerary.
Where do you go it alone? The forest in Oregon. What is the best place to set up a design shop? That'll be Taiping Shang in Hong Kong. And a furniture studio? Danzigerstrasse in Berlin. In the design section, we've crossed the globe to discover the places we'll have designs on in 2014.
In the edit section, we charter a new course for 2014 from behind the kitchen counters of Flanders, Belgium's up-and-coming culinary destination. We interview the rising chefs and food growers that are changing the region's image and putting it on the gastronomic map. We also take a sip of Georgian wine and Mexican coffee, some of the indispensable products in Monocle's pantry for this year.
The February issue of Monocle is on newsstands now, or get yourself a subscription. Visit monocle.com to find out how.
And you're back with The Stack here on Monocle 24 with me, Tyler Brulé. We're having something of a discussion on creating and branding magazines. But now let's jump over to Paris, where you can hardly walk more than a couple of blocks in the capital without passing a newspaper kiosk. And over the decades, they've become as iconic a part of the city's street furniture as the rotating Morris columns and the Art Deco cast iron metro entrances. Paris without these kiosks would be like London without its red telephone boxes. But what is the business model of Le Kiosk, and how is their function evolving with the changing requirements of the Gallic consumer? We sent our Paris correspondent, Tom Burgess-Watson, out onto the streets of the capital to find out more.
For more than a century and a half, a network of kiosks has provided Parisians and tourists alike with newspapers and magazines, as well as other practical items such as maps, drinks, and umbrellas. There are two distinct designs. One is dark green and recalls the 19th century tastes of Baron Haussmann, who reshaped the French capital. The other is chrome and glass, and it was rolled out during the 1980s, and it appears to draw inspiration from the then brand new Pompidou Centre. Well, I went along to meet Jean-Paul Abonenc, who is the Director General of Media Kiosk, which owns all of these kiosks. I asked him why it is that Parisians seem to have such a special place in their hearts for these structures, as well as the people who staff them.
I think they are so touched because of history and also to the special human contact and relationships created by the kiosk and especially by the newsagent. It's a real part of Paris and main cities in France. Our network is consisting in 800 kiosks in France. but 400 kiosks settled in Paris.
What are your plans to roll out more kiosks, not just in Paris, but elsewhere in France?
We have a plan, and supported by the public authorities. A convention was signed 3 years ago between the Minister of Culture and Communication and the Association of Mayors of France and the publishers to develop kiosk network in France. And we are the operator of this policy and this willingness. Yeah.
So how does Media Kiosk make its money? And how strong are the sales of newspapers and magazines here in France right now?
Unhappily, the trend is not stable. The decline is there for the newspapers and magazine sales. It's evident. But instead of that, kiosks are still developing. It's like a French paradox to see newspaper sales falling. But every week, a new kiosk is settled in a major city in France because very proactive support from authorities, publishers, help us to do the job. Yeah.
And what sort of advertising can you see on a typical Media Kiosk kiosk in the center of Paris?
Our main announcer come from luxury goods, fashion, movies, even more than press promotions, which consists in the majority of our business turnover a few years ago, but it is still declining now. But for luxury goods, for fashion, the kiosk network is very appreciated for its efficiency.
Well, one of the responsibilities of Jean-Paul Abonnec's Media Kiosk team is to assemble these iconic structures and to keep existing ones looking good and ensuring that they operate as they should. Well, Jean-Paul showed me where this all happens.
We're now in what looks like a hospital for these kiosks. Tell me what's going on here.
Yeah, in fact, it's our technical center where kiosks are renovated and reassembled for settlement. We have the two categories of kiosk aesthetically, Haussmannian one and moderns. And Haussmannian are still very, very settled in Paris, and our technician operate on the both areas. Yeah.
Is one more durable than the other? Is one just last?
The both generation are very strong.
I decided to pay a visit to some kiosks around the city. I began by visiting one at Paris's City Hall, Hôtel de Ville, where I met Louis Guillaume, who was buying a stack of French and international newspapers and magazines at the time.
I buy a newspaper, a daily. I change every day. I buy one day the Figaro, another day Libération, whatever. And that I like the kiosk for that, because I can pick up whatever I like. It's an easy feeling, it's on the fly, it's lovely. And also I like to dwell a little bit sometimes, look around what the new magazines are, because they have the old assortment.
Why do you think Parisians are so attached to the whole concept of the kiosk? What's the appeal?
We are proud of it. I mean, I feel proud of having kiosks. It's something in the city that belongs to the streets. And I'm very attached to the physical building, and also I'm attached to the fact that there's someone in the kiosk that tries to make a living.
So I decided to speak to a kioskier myself. I managed to track down James, who runs a kiosk in the 14th arrondissement of Paris. Although he's originally from the UK, judging from the titles he sells, his kiosk appears to cater to a predominantly French clientele.
Okay.
Merci.
Okay, thanks very much. Well. No, it's not much of an international kiosk, no. No, it's off the beaten track for the tourists. This particular kiosk is surrounded by other kiosks, which are slightly more in the general flow of traffic. So I think they do slightly better out of the international press scene.
Are you seeing numbers of newspapers and magazines sales declining at all? Are you not noticing that?
Yes, it's declining, yes. I don't know how it's going to evolve. Obviously,
like so many business models, that of the kiosk is having to adapt with the times. Newspaper and magazine sales in France might be in decline, but the prominence of these kiosks, which are passed by millions of Parisians every day, has doubtless helped to ensure that the decline in sales has been less significant than it might otherwise have been. Well, as Media Kiosk continues to push ahead with rolling out more and more of these iconic structures across France, newspapers and magazines will only become more accessible. And instead of just stemming the decline in print media sales, perhaps they'll succeed in reversing it. For Monocle in Paris, I'm Tom Burgess Watson.
That was our Paris correspondent, Tom Burgess Watson, speaking to the people behind and in front of Paris's kiosk. Now, I am joined in studio, they've been here the whole time, by Maurice Fraser, our creative director. And I say our because, of course, everyone will know that Richard Spencer Powell is the creative director of course, magazine Monocle. Maurice, of course, being the creative director of our sister agency, Wink Creative, and also Quina Drossel, our design director. And we're talking about the launch of what I believe is a very fine book, which is our Wink Creative Design Stories. Earlier in the program, of course, we were at the event, the launch on Wednesday evening, and so much of, and I guess this is one of the really interesting things, I think, when print and the physical form is such a big part of what we do, you're able to mount a proper exhibition. And I was thinking, if we were only a digital agency, okay, there'd be nice screens, there'd be great work to look at, but you wouldn't be able to pull off the same thing. And I think what's actually great about it, and if we can almost sort of go beyond the walls and describe the space, is our Shin Mononobe, who did really the 3D design for the exhibition, built almost a little Japanese temple to print. I never sort of thought about it, but it's got this wonderful structure. And all of our various volumes that we worked on have been given this pride of place, which is quite nice. I don't know who wants to start, but we've got a number of magazines here, and maybe we should, we have, Ariane was talking at the beginning of the program about Reporter magazine, and of course this is a title that we do for Porter Airlines in Canada. Much love, much stolen off the aircraft, which I think is always a very good thing. It's a sign that people like it. Maurice, where do you see this sort of sitting, I guess, within the structure, of the agency? Because, I think on some sides, I think we feel it's a bit of an anchor project for us.
Yeah, so, I mean, certainly as far as kind of, I think finding a way of telling these stories of the individuals that actually, people that are, flying the airline. I mean, this has really become the sort of the brand book for Porter Airlines. It's, it's very sort of human level. We're at a time when big sort of airlines are sort of trying to look local.
Yes.
Reporter really is already there, and they've already been sort of been sort of in this territory for many years. And I think when you look at all of the different photographers we work with, the stories that we have, we cover the neighborhoods. I think as Ariane was kind of mentioning earlier in her interview, it's really just this kind of very warm feeling of the brand, and it's very trustworthy and quite established. The format of the magazine as well, sort of, saddle stitched. It's uncoated paper. It's very sort of unpretentious, and sits, perfectly in the seat back pocket, which is very important.
And slides into it, to people's bags very easily. But as I said, I think, hopefully the airline is encouraging people to steal as well. You've got, I think a very beautiful piece of work, and I was touching on it because it also has pride of place in the book, Wish Casa magazine, which was not the easiest project, but a very nice assignment to be working in Sao Paulo, nonetheless. Maybe tell us a little bit about the evolution of that project.
It was Brazil is a very exciting place at the moment, as we all know, how it's growing so very fast and new brands entering the market. And I think at the time when Wish Casa approached us, it was one of the first of its kind, a magazine capturing the kind of architecture of Brazil, because Brazil looks very much outwards. They look to America, they look to Europe, and something that they would produce which was quintessentially Brazilian was a huge task, a challenge, but at the same time really exciting. So I think this magazine has been running for 3 years now. It's growing stronger every day. In fact, I had an email from the editor-in-chief just recently actually congratulating us on the book, but he said Wish Casa is growing stronger there. It issued 22 now. And this magazine is basically an ode to kind of all the beautiful architecture, the incredible modernist places, interior spaces, personal homes of the Brazilian people, with a very aspirational view, obviously, and a great edit of design pieces as well.
Do you think that this was a project, because of course we immersed ourselves in the market to do it, but in many ways it almost demanded an outsider deliver it, because if you live in Belo Horizonte, if you live in Rio, if you live in Sao Paulo, you're surrounded by all this great modernism every day. But in some ways, it was almost hard for the Brazilian client to see it.
Absolutely. And when we introduced our concept, and I think a big part of it was the kind of a very primary color palette, and because to us, Brazil is colorful, Brazil is vibrant, Brazil is bold, and they're not very much aware of that because they see it every day. And I think it really, really helped this outside point of view. At the same time, I think what is important, and that is something Brazil is still kind of learning, is a kind of slightly more refined design aesthetic, which we were able to kind of bring to the table as well.
I wish the exhibition would run and run. It's on for a few more days. Anyone listening, it's not on over the weekend. Maybe if you beg our security staff over the weekend, they will let you in to see it. But it's going to stay up just till the beginning of next week here in London. But there is discussion. It might go on the road. It seemed that Mr. Clanton was begging for us to take it to their very nice space in Berlin. So anyway, stay tuned, not just certainly to the stack, but to Monocle 24 in general, also to the newly launched website for Wink Creative as well. So of course, if we go on tour, it'll appear there as well. Maurice Fraser, our creative director, and Corinna Drossel, our design director, thanks very much for joining us on the program today.
Thank you, Tyler.
Thank you very much.
And that brings us to the end of this 75th edition of The Stack. Today's program was produced by David Pleasant, and the man behind the glass is Nathan Cooper, keeping all of the sound in check. If you have any comments or queries, then do drop us a note to info@monocle.com. Remember, we're back next Saturday at the very same time. And of course, you can always listen again at monocle.com or via iTunes. But for now, for me, Tyler Brulé, have a very good weekend. Goodbye.